From the studios of Boise State Public Radio, I'm Gemma Gaudette. Just after 8 a.m. this morning, the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, nearly 50 years of established abortion rights in the United States. Now, as protests continue outside the Supreme Court today, trigger laws outlawing abortion are going into effect around the country. Idaho has its own laws on the books regarding abortion designed to kick in now that Roe v. Wade has been overturned and abortion rights have been returned to individual states. So what does this mean for our country? What does it mean for Idaho? And what does it mean for people who become pregnant? Well, we're posing that question to Shakira Sanders. She's a law professor at the University of Idaho who is currently a visiting professor of law at Brooklyn Law School. Shakira, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me, as always, Gemma.
So, Professor, let's start with just the basics. How did this issue get in front of the Supreme Court?
Well, like all cases get up to the U.S. Supreme Court, a case was filed challenging abortion restrictions passed in the state of Mississippi. That case went through the courts where an appeal was ultimately made to the U.S. Supreme Court. You had a sufficient number of justices, I believe it takes four, who agreed to hear the case. And you now have five justices who agree to overturn Roe versus Wade.
So what were the arguments given by SCOTUS? Let's start with the arguments for overturning Roe.
Well, I want to first self-confess, Gemma, that this is an opinion that is about four hours old and 200 pages long.
So you haven't read the whole thing quite yet?
And I'm a pretty fast reader, but I haven't had a chance to digest the opinion from an academic standpoint, because, of course, like many others in the country, I am also digesting this opinion from an emotional standpoint.
Yeah.
So from what I've seen so far from the reporting on the opinion and the little bit I have looked at the opinion, and my understanding is that it is not incredibly different from the draft leaked opinion that we received several months ago. And so here, what we see is a wholesale rejection of the underpinnings of Roe versus Wade, which is that in our history and tradition, there is has been and should continue to be the ability to terminate a pregnancy before viability. There has always been a number of members of the U.S. Supreme Court who have disagreed with that opinion. Now you have a majority of the court who does so.
So then we do know that there were three justices who dissented. What are their arguments against overturning Roe?
What we've seen from majority opinions in the past, which is, if you look at the history and tradition in the United States, in addition to some of the history and tradition, primarily in Western Europe, there has been an ability to terminate a pregnancy. And that right is a right that is protected under the U.S. Constitution, particularly its provisions regarding due process and how the court has interpreted the right of privacy through many of the amendments in our Bill of Rights.
So can we talk a little bit about this right to privacy? You and I have touched on this before when this leaked opinion came out. And even Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the late Ruth Bader Ginsburg, said that Roe was not the best case to be putting abortion rights on, because this is the right to privacy versus what she talked about, which is equality, which is, and she said, and this is a quote from Ruth Bader Ginsburg, quote, "It is essential to women's equality with man that she be the decision maker, that her choice be controlling. If you impose restraints that impede her choice, you are disadvantaging her because of her sex, unquote. Can we unpack that a bit? That argument of equality or inequality versus this argument of the right to privacy.
Yes. So one, I think people should understand that from my viewpoint and the way I approach constitutional law, it's not a binary choice, one versus the other. Why can't it be both privacy and equality? So that's how I've always chosen to look at the opinion itself. But to get to your point and to maybe dovetail it with what I was previously discussing about the original Roe opinion, for some time, I have had questions about the opinion. It starts by telling us we're going to look at history and tradition. It walks us through ancient Persian traditions and much of the Western world. We fast forward to the English common law, very soon getting to the American colonial era. And particularly there, we do not see the court in Roe versus Wade say anything about the rights of enslaved women or the rights of Native American women whose children were also taken from their custody throughout our histories and traditions. And so for me, when I think about where we are now, perhaps this opens the door to an opportunity to have those conversations. Because if this right should be secured again in the future, it cannot be on the same basis. It must be more inclusive because only then will it be better protected. And so what we also have to understand is that even as of yesterday, there were many women who had been living for decades without access to this right if they chose to exercise it. And yet that has not been something that as an American public, we speak very much about. You have organizations who do a lot of advocacy, but it is as if we've all been living with equality when it comes to this right, and we have not. And so when I think about that next generation of judges, of advocates, of lawyers that I have had the pleasure of teaching in Idaho, along with those who will be opposing them, I think perhaps our continued debate on this topic will be more inclusive, hopefully, and will be more acknowledging of the history that Roe versus Wade left behind.
And I think you make a good point, Professor, in regards to if this comes before the Supreme Court again, if there is a case that is brought up again in regards
when
to abortion
it comes
rights,
back
when
before.
When is that? It does need to be on, it can't be just around privacy. And my understanding is that's what Ruth Bader Ginsburg had said years ago. Is that it must be an even stronger case. And as you said, that has more protection. And I think it's going to be interesting to see what that case looks like, because you are right, it is not an if, it is a when this comes back.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, when you think about the state of legal education today, who are going to be the first people, right, to make sure that this right comes back? Who will be in our courthouses? Well, I can say for me, with regards to the legal profession, we now have to be more concerned about some of the issues with regards to discrimination and disparities. One of the interesting things in Idaho is that less than 2 years ago, there was a study issued about the culture and climate of the legal profession in Idaho. And many of your viewers may be surprised to learn the high numbers of women and other people who have reported discrimination as lawyers in the legal profession. Think about how this ultimately affects those individuals' ability to be effective advocates on the issues that we care about. So for me, again, I think this opens the door to a multitude of social issues that many people have felt need more care and attention. And I can tell you, Gemma, after teaching 10 years in Idaho, I have no doubt that the next generation of Idaho attorneys are ready to tackle these important questions. Mm. And not just attorneys, but the advocates who help them make their cases.
And what does this ruling mean for abortion rights, not just in the U.S., but here in Idaho, because we have what is called a trigger law.
Mm-hmm. Yes. When you think about our trigger law, the complex framework it seems to establish for establishing whether an abortion is medically necessary, the type of exemptions that it contains with regards to what is a medical abortion, very likely many of these issues will be in our state court in Idaho. And there's going to be a need for medical professionals to speak mm-hmm. about, well, why is it that Idaho has this exemption if there is a fear that the harm to the woman is self-harm, or I should say the harm to the patient, because trans men can be pregnant too. Mm-hmm. And so there, I think it's going to be all hands on deck approach to make sure in Idaho that regardless of what side you're on with regards to the issue to terminate a pregnancy, that the right decisions are being made to protect the health and the safety of those who are having who are pregnant and who are giving birth. And to be honest, there's not a lot of jurisprudence out there on what it means to have this exemption. So there will be some more new law created, Gemma, to interpret Idaho's exemption. Not clear if these type of issues will make it to the U.S. Supreme Court because they seem to have punted to the states.
Before I let you go, there has been much chatter on social media since yesterday when the Supreme Court overturned an almost 100-year-old gun law in New York, basically saying that this law gave states too much overreach. So mm-hmm. they want to take that away from the states. Yet mm-hmm. today, the U.S. Supreme Court says, well, the states actually need to have more control over abortion rights, so we're punting this back to the states.
Yes.
Can you explain they can come up to what seems like, truly, it feels like hypocrisy?
Yes. Now, first of all, let me remind your listeners that these type of tensions and contradictions are written into our Constitution. Mm-hmm. Think about this document that guarantees freedom, but not for all within its borders, that guarantees the right to vote, but not until the Native Americans of this country well into the 1970s with regards to finally recognizing it. And so here we are again at another crossroads in our U.S. Constitutional Supreme Court history. I, for one, am proud to be here to be able to speak on these issues, and I am privileged to do so. But I do try to take a more measured approach. This is not the end all be all. It's going to be very difficult for many, but it has been very difficult for many. That is why I truly believe that the fight is not over. We have entered another chapter in this fight. But to make clear, to the extent that the court has said yesterday that for purposes of self-defense, to defend yourself, you now have a more expanded right to carry firearms that could potentially end another person's life. And today, the court says, despite the medical issues in some cases, despite the financial hardships in many other cases, despite the dangers to you because of your partner and their behaviors, despite all of this 50-year history of this right, flawed as it is, It no longer exists. Well, perhaps in some small way, we have connected to those who have been disparately impacted by discrimination and animus in our past. And perhaps this is a moment to reflect upon the fight that they waged to secure their own rights. Can't be any easier, I'm sorry, any harder than what we're facing today, Gemma. And so for me, I look for inspiration in these moments, not despair.
Well, I so appreciate that because it seems that there is much despair today. So you are right. It is keeping our eyes on the future. So thank you. As always, thank you very much. We have been speaking with Shakira Sanders, a law professor at the University of Idaho, about the U.S. Supreme Court overturning Roe versus Wade this morning. And of course, Shakira, as we said, is a law professor at the U of I. She is currently a visiting professor at the of law at Brooklyn Law School. And we thank you for your time and for your wisdom.
Thank you for having me, as always.